the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's the host of Vatican Insider, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to Vatican Insider and another historic weekend. The second with our new Holy Father, American-born Augustinian Pope Leo XIV. In fact, the inaugural Mass of his pontificate takes place on Sunday, May 18th in St. Peter's Square. And by the way, St. John Paul's birthday was May 18. He would have been 105. Interestingly enough, just days ago, May 13th, marked the 44th anniversary of the attempt on John Paul's life in St. Peter's Square. A beautiful Mass was celebrated in St. Peter's Basilica that afternoon by Cardinal Stanisław Żywiec, the former Archbishop of Krakow, Poland, who served as the late Pontiff's secretary for 40 years. I was in the square that fateful day 44 years ago. This week, in what is normally the interview segment of Vatican Insider, I've prepared a special on the beautiful shrine of Our Lady of the Rosary of Pompeii, just south of Naples. Why this shrine this week? Well, Pope Leo XIV was elected on May 8th, the feast day of this marvelous Marian shrine, and Mary is very dear to him. Now, let's look back at the top news stories of the week. Sunday, May 11th. On Sunday morning, Pope Leo XIV visited the Vatican Grottoes to celebrate Holy Mass at the altar near the tomb of St. Peter. Concelebrating was Father Alejandro Moral Anton, Prior General of the Order of St. Augustine. After Mass, the Pope spent time in silent prayer at the tombs of his predecessors, and he also paused before the niche of the palliums, the white woolen stoles that symbolize the unity between the Pope and the metropolitan archbishops across the world. Leo will receive the pallium Sunday at the Mass inaugurating his Petrine ministry. Before reciting the Regina Caeli from St. Peter's main balcony, Pope Leo XIV expressed his joy Sunday and offered his warm greetings to the estimated 100,000 pilgrims and visitors in the square. Recalling that Sunday marks Good Shepherd Sunday, Pope Leo XIV described it as a gift from God that he can celebrate on the first Sunday of his service as Bishop of Rome, when the Gospel reading tells us about Jesus, who reveals himself as the true shepherd, who knows and loves his sheep and gives his life for them. Then, to the astonishment and joy of everyone in the square, Leo XIV sang the Regina Caeli, bringing tears to many eyes. Calling for prayers for vocations to the priesthood and consecrated life, he spoke to young people in particular regarding vocations and encouraged them, saying, "Do not be afraid. Accept the invitation of the Church and of Christ the Lord." Pope Leo also echoed the cry for peace of his predecessor, Pope Francis. In today's dramatic context of a Third World War fought piecemeal, I too appeal to the powerful of the world by repeating these ever-relevant words, "Never again war." After the Regina Caeli, Leo XIV had the papal apartment of the Apostolic Palace reopened, with the removal of the seals that had been placed there during the afternoon of April 21st, following the death of Pope Francis. Monday, May 12th, Pope Leo held an audience with media professionals who were in Rome to report on the death of Pope Francis, the interregnum, the conclave, and the first days of his own ministry. Thanking them for their tireless work over these intense few weeks, he urged journalists to serve truth and promote peace, saying communication helps create a society's culture. To great applause, one of many he received, Leo reaffirmed the Church's solidarity with journalists who are imprisoned for reporting the truth, and he called for their release. He said their suffering reminds the world of the importance of the freedom of expression and the press, adding that only informed individuals can make free choices. Above all, it's vital to promote a different kind of communication, one that does not seek consensus at all costs, does not use aggressive words, does not follow the culture of competition, and never separates the search for truth from the love with which we must humbly seek it. Also Monday, Without saying who initiated the call, the press office announced that Pope Leo XIV and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky had spoken by phone following the Pope's appeal that every effort be made for long and lasting peace in Ukraine and that all children be returned to their families. Tuesday, May 13, Pope Leo XIV has chosen to maintain an active social media presence through the official papal accounts on X and Instagram, according to a press release from the Dicastery for Communication on Tuesday. You can find his post at Pontifex. The Pope's first post on Instagram and a day later on X was taken from his first public address just after his election on May 8th. The Instagram post included several iconic photos from the first days of his pontificate. Also Monday, just before noon on this Feast of Our Lady of Fatima, the Pope arrived at the place he called home from 2001 to 2013 while serving as Prior General of the Augustinian Order. He celebrated Mass with the Augustinian brothers at their generalate and joined them for lunch, a routine that was almost daily for him when he was a cardinal. Wednesday, May 14th. Reciting the traditional Easter greeting, Christ is risen, He is truly risen, Pope Leo XIV welcomed Eastern Catholics to the Vatican for the Jubilee of Eastern Churches. He highlighted the need to preserve their traditions and pray for true peace, which is, quote, reconciliation, forgiveness, and the courage to turn the page and start anew. Addressing the faithful from the 23 sui juris churches in full communion with Rome, the Holy Father said, "The Church needs you. The contribution that the Christian East can offer us today is immense." And he pointed to the need to recover the sense of mystery expressed in Eastern liturgies, the importance of rediscovering the sense of the primacy of God. Also Wednesday, in a meeting marked by warmth and humorous banter, the Holy Father welcomed Italian tennis champion Jannik Sinner and his parents as Sinner was playing in Rome at the 2025 Italian Open. He gave the Pope one of his own tennis rackets and said, "Here's a ball, do you want to play a bit?" To which Leo XIV, who loves tennis, said, "We might break something in the room." In fact, a journalist Monday had proposed a charity tennis match to the Pope, assuring him, "I'll bring Agassi," and Leo replied, "Good idea, as long as I don't bring Sinner." This was a joke in reference to the fear of challenging the great champion from Alto Adige. Thursday, May 15th, Leo received a delegation of Christian brothers and recalled the saying of their founder, St. John Baptist de la Salle, "Your altar is the classroom." He commended the educational efforts of the Christian brothers and encouraged them to continue inspiring joyful and fruitful paths of holiness. Frequently referred to as Christian brothers, the LaSallian brothers are named after their founder, as I just said, St. John Baptist de La Salle, who founded the mission to provide a human and Christian education to the young, especially the poor. The brothers, lay religious men dedicated exclusively to education, are known for their global education efforts. Also Thursday, the Major Archbishop of Kyiv, His Beatitude Sviatoslav Shevchuk, expressed his gratitude to Pope Leo, who received him in audience. The head of the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church thanked the Pope for his words during the Regina Caeli on Sunday, May 11th, when he recalled the suffering of the Ukrainian people, calling for an authentic, just, and lasting peace. The Pope had also asked for the release of all prisoners and the return home of children who had been taken away. Friday, May 16th, Pope Leo XIV addressed members of the diplomatic corps accredited to the Holy See, just 1 week after his election to the See of Peter. He reaffirmed the Church's commitment to serve all humanity, describing the diplomatic community as a family that shares the joys and sorrows of life and is grounded in human and spiritual values. The Pope said, "In this family, the Church does not seek privileges, but rather opportunities to build bridges, especially through its distinctive form of diplomacy rooted in pastoral concern." Reflecting on his own life, which has taken him across North and South America and Europe, the Pope expressed his personal desire to transcend borders and to deepen the Church's relationship with peoples and nations throughout the world. At the heart of the Pope's address were three essential words, which he identified as the pillars of the Church's missionary activity and the foundation of the Holy See's diplomatic engagement: peace, justice, and truth. Well, those are the week's news highlights, focusing, of course, on the newly elected American-born Pope Leo XIV. Now, stay here for my special on the Shrine of Our Lady of the Rosary of Pompeii. Welcome to the Q&A. This week, answering a question that came via email, I explain what an equivalent canonization is. Very early in his pontificate, Pope Francis issued a decree called an equivalent canonization, declaring one of his favorite Jesuits, Blessed Peter Faber, a saint. In equivalent canonization, a procedure described by Pope Benedict XIV in the 18th century, the Pope waives the usual judicial process and declares that a blessed's liturgical cult is extended to the universal church. Benedict XVI canonized St. Hildegard of Bingen by equivalent canonization in 2012. And earlier, Pope Francis had done the same with St. Angela of Foligno. Equivalent canonization, though not frequent, is not rare in the Church, wrote Cardinal Angelo Amato, prefect of the Congregation for Causes of Saints, in an interview published in L'Osservatore Romano at the time of the Holy Father's decree. Cardinal Amato said three elements are necessary for an equivalent canonization: a long-time cult, the constant and common attestation of credible historians of the Blessed's virtues, and an uninterrupted reputation for wonders obtained through the Blessed's intercession. All three, he said, were present in St. Peter Faber's case.
Mother Angelica had a simple goal when she began EWTN: to reach the world with the gospel message. EWTN is the most trusted source of authentically Catholic content on the air today, featuring Mother Angelica, Dr. Greg and Lisa Popchek, and Raymond Arroyo. We've never wavered from our mandate to proclaim the truth and majesty of the Catholic faith. Thank you for joining EWTN in this mission.
This is Jim Pinto, director of EWTN Media Missionaries. Mother Angelica said, "The essence of evangelization is to tell everybody Jesus loves you." You can help EWTN share the good news by becoming a media missionary. Visit EWTNmissionaries.com today and join us in sharing the eternal word with the world.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider and to another special I've prepared on a much-loved, very celebrated Italian shrine. We will actually take a mini pilgrimage to Our Lady of the Rosary of Pompeii, a half hour south of Naples, which has a beautiful and even touching story. It's a shrine that has a special place in my heart. My very first encounter in 1997 with a prelate of this beloved Marian shrine is at the end of this story. It's a surprising and unexpected encounter that will help you understand why I have a special place in my heart and in my memories for the late Archbishop Francesco Saverio Toppi. In 2015, I was back on yet another visit. An acquaintance of mine from those days that we both worked in the Roman Curia, Archbishop Tommaso Caputo, the prelate of this beloved Marian shrine, had celebrated the 11 a.m. Mass, which I had attended, and I was blessed to have a chance to speak with him in the sacristy before Mass with the help of a volunteer Dame of Malta, Christiana. Our Lady of the Rosary of Pompeii is also beloved by popes. Pope St. John Paul II visited Pompeii on October 21, 1979, during a visit to Naples, and he returned there on October 7, 2003, for the conclusion of the Year of the Rosary. Pope Benedict XVI presented his sixth golden rose to Our Lady at the Shrine of Pompeii during the month dedicated to the Rosary on October 19, 2008. And Pope Francis visited this Marian shrine on March 21, 2015. I had visited just before his trip to the shrine. After spending several minutes in quiet prayer before the famous image of Our Lady of the Rosary, the Pope greeted the faithful, saying, "Thank you. Thank you so much for this warm welcome. We prayed to Our Lady so that she might bless us all, you, me, and the whole world. We need Our Lady to watch over us. And pray for me, don't forget. Now I invite you all to recite a Hail Mary to Our Lady, and then I will give you my blessing." Pope Francis has often spoken of his love for the Virgin Mary and the importance of Marian shrines. Archbishop Caputo described Pope Francis's visit to Pompeii as an event of extraordinary ecclesial importance. And Our Lady of the Rosary had a special place in Francis's heart in the pandemic year of 2020. During the May 6th Wednesday General Audience, in greetings to Italian language faithful listening into the audience as it was live streamed from the Papal Library of the Apostolic Palace, Pope Francis reminded them that 2 days later, on May 8th, an intense prayer of petition to Our Lady of the Rosary will be raised at the Shrine of Pompeii. "I urge everyone to unite themselves spiritually to this popular act of faith and devotion, so that through the intercession of the Blessed Virgin, the Lord may grant mercy and peace to the Church and to the whole world." In fact, twice each year, on May 8th and again on the first Sunday of October, solemn prayers of petition are offered at the Marian Shrine of Pompeii for the needs of the whole world. Now I'm going to start the story of the shrine with a quote from the man who founded Our Lady of the Rosary of Pompeii. Quote, "With the boldness of desperation, I lifted my face and hands to the Heavenly Virgin and cried, 'If it be true that you promised Saint Dominic that whoever spreads the rosary will be saved, I will be saved, because I will not leave Pompeii until I have spread your rosary.'" Those are the words of Blessed Bartolo Longo, said in Pompeii, Italy, in October 1872. Now, let's go back a bit in time for the story of Blessed Bartolo and the Shrine of Our Lady of the Rosary of Pompeii. At 1 p.m. on August 24th, 79 B.C., Mount Vesuvius rumbled, roared, and then erupted, heaving its molten insides onto the populace of Pompeii and burying the ancient city. What remained was only a ghostly silence of a once flourishing center. The new Pompeii would arise 1796 years later. Called the Miracle City by its inhabitants, Pompeii as we know it today is the result of that promise made by Bartolo Longo, a lawyer and devout layman, a promise that became a reality in 1875 when work began on the construction of the church dedicated to Our Lady of the Rosary. The church and the buildings housing the charitable works associated with it eventually led to the birth of the city, the new Pompeii. Bartolo Longo was born in 1841 near Brindisi on Italy's Adriatic coast. Those who knew him as a young man described him as cordial, easygoing, of a lively intelligence, and devoted to the church. However, his university years were to be troubled ones, as anti-clerical sentiments were running strong in newly unified Italy. Prodded by anti-church liberals, Bartolo tested the waters, if you will, of Spiritism, and he went through a crisis in his faith. Aided by two good friends, Professor Vincenzo Pepe and the learned Dominican Father Alberto Radente, he not only rediscovered his faith, but renounced his legal career and devoted himself to works of charity and religious studies. Providence brought Bartolo Longo to the little town of Pompeii, a half hour south of Naples, in 1872, where a widow and the mother of five, the Countess Mariana de Fusco, asked him to administer her property. Struck by the human and religious poverty of the peasants of the area, Bartolo anguished over how he could help them better their lives. Following a divine inspiration, he decided to devote himself to teaching the catechism and spreading devotion to the rosary, remembering Father Radente's words, "If you are looking for salvation, propagate the rosary. It is the promise of Mary. He who propagates the rosary shall be saved." For 3 years, Bartolo Longo organized yearly festivals in the fall to bring the people together for catechesis and to pray the rosary. This could be best achieved, he felt, if the people had a proper church with an image of Our Lady of the Rosary as the focal point. Thus, in 1875, he began searching the stores of Naples, hoping to have one in time for that year's concluding ceremonies on November 13th. The ever-faithful and supportive Father Rodente recalled that years earlier he had bought such an image, which he had entrusted to Sister Maria Concetta of the Conservatory of the Rosary at Porta Medina. Bartolo hurried to Porta Medina, asked for the painting, and was horrified when he saw how ugly it was and how much in need of repair. He would later write, "Dear me, I felt a tightening around my heart as soon as I set eyes on it." When Countess de Fusco saw the painting of the Virgin with the child Jesus handing rosaries to St. Dominic and St. Rose of Lima, she said, "It seems to have been made specifically to discourage devotion." To make matters worse, the size of the painting precluded Bartolo taking it to Pompeii on the train. The only other possible form of transportation was through a wagoneer who weekly transported a load of manure to Pompeii. So the wagon it was to be. The painting was touched up for the November 13th ceremony and has since been restored three times, during which St. Rose was changed to St. Catherine of Siena. Today, the painting hangs above the main altar of the Basilica, beckoning to several million pilgrims annually as strongly as it once repulsed Bartolo Longo and his loyal supporters. By 1855, some 940 cures and miracles were ascribed to Our Lady of the Rosary of Pompeii. The number well exceeds that today, as witnessed by the countless ex-votos lining the walls of the shrine and adjacent buildings. On my first visit, as I lingered to study several hundred of the votive offerings, the ex-voto, a catechesis to Mary's intercession, I realized that here was the true history of the shrine. A single man's love for the rosary, transmitted to generations of faithful. He loved, they believed, and together they built what is today one of the preeminent Marian shrines in the world. Each year on May 8th and on the first Sunday of October, thousands of faithful gather at the shrine for the Feast of the Supplication, to petition favors, and to offer thanksgiving for favors received. In fact, most if not all of the plaques of thanksgiving that line the walls and halls and corridors of this shrine have the letters PGR on them, Per Grazie Ricevute, for favors received, and this is what I referred to earlier as ex votos. The neoclassical pontifical shrine and Basilica of Our Lady of the Rosary, in all of its frescoed marble splendor, was dedicated in 1891. 15 years after Bartolo began to collect pennies from the peasants to build this citadel to Mary. But our devoted lawyer felt that this monument would be incomplete if works of charity were not part of it, and so, over the years, until his death in 1926, Bartolo founded homes for orphan girls, for the sons of prisoners, and later orphaned boys. Today, this monumental complex, the pulsating heart of the new Pompeii, includes administrative offices, a chapel for confessions, a school, a home for elderly women, and the offices of the monthly publication, The Rosary and the New Pompeii. It began in 1884. It also houses the living quarters and offices of the prelate of Pompeii and the shrine director. On my first visit to the shrine a number of years ago, I had a long conversation with the then director, Monsignor Pietro Gaggiano, who was also my guide to the shrine. It was a Sunday morning, and after Mass, we began our tour. At the end of our visit, Monsignor Gaggiano left his office for a minute, and when he came back, he asked me if I had lunch plans. I said I had nothing special planned, probably just someplace near the shrine, and he said that Archbishop Francesco Toppi, the prelate of the shrine and territorial prelature, wanted to invite me for lunch. It was a great lunch with marvelous conversation. If I had 100 questions about the shrine, Archbishop Toppi had 200 questions about the Pope, the Vatican, the press office, and any interesting tidbits I could give him. After lunch, I had a really special treat when Monsignor and the Archbishop took me to one of the rooms that Pope John Paul had been to during his 1979 visit. Archbishop Toppi walked to an immense piece of furniture, opened at the top drawer and took out a very large book, the Shrine's VIP guest book. He proudly opened it to John Paul's signature, and then he showed me a few more famous names, and then opened to a blank page and asked me to sign the book. I said, in no way did I feel worthy to be part of such an important volume. And he said, but we are all children of God. So my signature has now been immortalized in Pompeii. The devotion of this wonderful Capuchin Archbishop and Monsignor Gaggiano to the shrine in Tobartolo Longo was palpable as they spoke reverently of his exemplary life and emphasized the fact it was a layperson who accomplished the, quote, miracle of Pompeii, who founded the still flourishing works of charity, and who in 1897 founded the Dominican Sisters of the Holy Rosary of Pompeii. Both of them also pointed with pride to Pope John Paul's 1979 visit to the shrine and to the tomb of the man he would beatify the following year. In fact, Blessed Bartolo Longo is buried beneath the image he had wished. We spoke of miracles and of saints. I asked if it was harder today in a fast-paced secular world with temptations on every corner to become a saint. Archbishop Topi answered, "Every time has its trials and its temptations, and every time has its saints. We are conditioned by the times in which we live, and we adjust to meet those times and face up to those trials." Now a little postscriptum. On April 2, 2014, exactly 7 years to the day of his death, the cause for canonization for Archbishop Topi was opened. The current prelate of the Shrine of Our Lady of the Rosary of Pompeii, as I said earlier, Archbishop Tommaso Caputo, having asked the opinion of the other bishops of the Campania region, and having obtained the nulla osta, nothing's in the way, of the Congregation for the Causes of Saints, decreed the introduction of the cause. The request was put forth by Father Carlo Coloni, OFM Cap, Postulator General of the Cause of Beatification of Archbishop Topi. And another postscriptum. In April 2014, Monsignor Gaggiano, former administrator of the shrine, was named rector of the local seminary.
For more information on these stories, or to check out Joan's blog and to ask her a question, go to EWTN.com. That's EWTN.com. Thanks for listening to Vatican Insider on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.